Here's a verse that Casey uses perhaps more than any other Bible verse. And I think for years, actually until I was thinking about this discussion, I sort of thought, here's a nice Bible verse. And as I address the topic of choice, I realize this is perhaps one of the most vital passages in the whole of the Bible. It's Deuteronomy 30. He told nearly everyone to begin with this verse. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your seed may live, that you may love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life. Choose life, I have set before you. And the Revised Version says, I have set before you life and prosperity, death and adversity. Well, what is the thing that you most prize, that you most value, that you think means the most to you, that you most regularly abuse? Good choices. See, everyone, we live in a free country. People say, oh, it's a free world, isn't it? And so we make choices. And this gift to choose to be co-creators with glorious creations, we choose to make ourselves smaller and smaller and smaller. These choices don't so much make us free as they capture us and imprison us. So I want to talk to you about living on the landing. And by definition, a landing is a level place between flights of stairs. Imagine a seven-story building. The seventh floor is a penthouse because it's open at the top. And that would symbolize our universal consciousness. So at every moment, we are about to make a choice. And I mean literally about every moment, about to make a choice. So you visualize, I'm on the landing. Here's a flight that'll take me up. Here's a flight that'll take me down. And that's where we live. We live at these choice points. How many decisions do you think that you probably make every day? Here's what the research shows. 35,000. 35,000 decisions every day. And so we live at a deciding point, and actually very few of those are neutral. It will take us, that choice will take a down step or up a step in increments. I figured how many bricks there are in the Empire State and how many choices we make in a year. And there are jillions of them, but we make about as many choices a year as there are on the bricks in the Empire State. So every choice we make is a building block. Every choice we make with the mind, which is the builder, we put something in place or take something out of place. So we're either going uphill or downhill. We can think of stairways. We can think of a ladder. Casey uses this illustration. We're all on a ladder. And he says, don't judge those that are higher on the ladder or lower on the ladder. Just we're in a position of where we can move up and down. And we find ourselves also, I mentioned a seven-story building because, as you all know, we have seven spiritual centers. And those spiritual centers are related also to the planetary system of this solar system. So I can be at heart level, Venus, and maybe feeling something strongly, and then I allow myself to get hurt, and it goes down to Mars, and the solar plexus, and I feel angry or put out or something like that. So these choices that we make bounce up and down with our endocrine system, and the hormonal secretions that can be either attuning us to being God beings, or, you know, the psalmist says, you are God's children, the Most High, but you're making of yourself either gods or devils. See, we're every choice we make, and these are cumulative. It's not as though you start every day afresh. What you do start every day with is a choice. And every moment we have a choice. Now, how can we make those choices? And that's what's so important here. I can say, this experience I'm about to encounter, I can make of it a stepping stone and go up a flight, or a stumbling block and I can allow myself to go down. The choice point is always with us. We're always building. And unless we're working hard at it, those choices don't simply go away. How can we choose then? And back to Casey and what he says is the most important experience for everyone. He uses the word ideal. I've conducted dozens of workshops on setting ideals, and almost regularly no one works on it. One time I was doing a workshop on an ideal, and I said, I'm going to stand at the door. No one leaves unless you have written down a spiritual ideal. And for the first time in such a workshop, I got some results. There's a disinclination for people to do this, and I'm not clear why, but I think it's sort of like making a commitment to yourself that you know you don't want to keep. I don't know how that works. But what an ideal is about is a standard, a criterion, something by which to measure. I've mentioned the Empire State and bricks. Imagine a mason with a plumb line. You don't want your wall to be leaning out one direction or another. You see, you set a plumb line so that you can build vertically. And you set an ideal. So, you know, the mason may not look at the plumb line a lot, but there's an awareness there. There's a standard. And we want it to move straight up and straight down. To have a standard by, so you're about to make a decision. And the question is, why? And the answer is, for most of us, multiple. One of the worst whys is because I was afraid. Say, I'm about to make a decision. Why did you choose that? Well, I was afraid if. No, don't ever make a decision. There may be some fear. There may be some genuine fear. That's not the basis for making a decision. So Jesus in the garden says, Lord, I don't want to go through this crucifixion thing. I'm afraid it'll hurt. And okay. If you're afraid, you don't have to choose that. No, we have to choose what we know to be right. And this is, among so many things, so fascinating in Casey. He doesn't say your ideal should be what someone else says. He says, you are the only one. When people ask, is my ideal correct? He said, that's up to you. See, what you do is to set a standard for yourself. And then he says, write it down, and you'll be surprised how often it will change. You see, as we set higher standards for ourselves and make progress with that, we move ahead and we change consciousness. We see our consciousness grow. We see insights that we hadn't had before that give us some clarity. So the step for making choices is with respect to what? With respect to a standard or a criterion that you have set for yourself. And once you have that, then you say, oh, I'm about to do this. Why? Because I want to be a channel of blessing. Because I think it'd be fun. Because I love the taste of this particular, see, why? We ask And you can't really get a why. We're multiply motivated until we get clarity about what it is you want to motivate you. It's not what you think it ought to be. It's not a moralistic choice. It's just something you say to yourself, this to me is a meaningful standard. This is something I want to measure my life by. This is something I want to measure my choices by. And then this idea of our God beingness and the particular gift that we sometimes call intuition. No matter how far astray, Casey says, there's not a question you can ask that you can't answer within yourself. He actually says, if you can raise the question, you can answer it within yourself. Turn within and answer. So you say, I'm about to make a choice. And you work with this intuition. I have the impression that I ought to do this. And then you can't make a mistake, because once you say, this measures up to my ideal, the intuitive choice I make, in contrast to what society expects or what reason we expect, I feel intuitively that I should do this. Then you say, is it consistent with my ideal? And if it is, you can't get into trouble. But some people are just fearful of doing this straightforward, simple endeavor. So the problem for every one of us with respect to choices is the difference between short-term gratification and long-term results. And the bigger problem for every soul and for all of us is short-term, long-term, what are we talking about? We're talking about eternity. We're talking about a long, long, long time. We're not talking about just some choices that I make in this incarnation. So there's a passage in the Bible I've returned to again and again. I gave a talk on it once. In Hebrews, there's an expression, people denied themselves this and this and this, that they might receive a better resurrection. So what I interpret that to mean, because Casey says sometimes resurrection in the body in the Bible refers to reincarnation, making choices that you might receive a better resurrection, that you might have a better incarnation. Some of you I know are not coming back. But you still have choices about finding yourself in a plane of consciousness that is better. And so the choices that we make are not just whether I eat this chocolate bar or not. I love telling this story about Anne because it's so instructive. She's living the spiritual life. She goes along. She's about to take some food. She says, would this be for my highest good? And the voice says, are you kidding? See, we don't dare ask ourselves if this will be for our highest good, because we might get an answer.
You didn't mention that it was chocolate.
You know, some people say, is there chocolate in heaven? And others say, if not, I'm not going there. Well, I would say that's what heaven was made for, maybe. So we have the biblical story of Esau, Jacob and Esau. Esau sells his birthright for a mess of pottage. That's just a little Bible story that tells us something about losing something magnificent just over a matter of instant gratification. Now, that's not to say that Esau wasn't famished. It's not as though there wasn't a need there. But what he does is sacrifices many incarnations, perhaps, over this one thing. Now, here's a sequence of events that I continue to share with you because I want you to really think about this seriously. First, there are universal laws. The universe is lawful. It's not by chance. It's not by coincidence. We say, oh, it was just a coincidence. By chance, this. No, there are laws there. Universal laws, which means they work for everybody under every circumstance. There are universal laws. The simplest one is like begets like. Pigeons have pigeons. They don't have quail. Oak trees, acorns, what comes out of it? An oak tree. Like begets like. Now, that especially happens with us as co-creators. As co-creators with God, what we build is multiplied in itself. So, there are universal laws. Second, to try to find ourselves to want to be in accord with that. How can I get myself in accord with this law? And I say, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you try and fail. And that's where the work comes in. Because at that point, you have to say, what are the factors underneath? And by that, I'm addressing the question of the subconscious, the unconscious forces. And those influences, those impulses, those inclinations that come from the subconscious. So if I really want to be in accord with the universal law, if I really want to be loving, and I set out to be loving, and suddenly I find myself I'm not there, now then I have to address what are those forces out of my awareness. And Casey says this should be the greater study of all of humankind, the study of the subconscious. And I had to read this dozens of times maybe before I got it clear that why he says this should be the study is not so much that we need to know how to use intuition, but rather we need to understand that if we don't understand our own subconscious, then it's going to keep bringing us down, working against us. So this, as we consider making choices, we need to consider, do I really understand myself? And everyone feels, yes, I have a pretty good understanding of myself. I've done a lot of good self-study. I understand myself. And then I ask them, are you pretty good at dream interpretation? And can you interpret your own dreams? And I find no one feels very good at that. You see, these dreams show us how little awareness we have. It's like I say, I understand myself because I understand everything in this room. But then I discover there's another room in this house. That's where I go in dreaming sleep. If there's another room, maybe there's another. And so how many categories of consciousness or subconscious or unconscious processes are within us? And once we set out to put our lives right, we need to address those forces that we have not let ourselves be so fully aware of, that we have not articulated, that we have not, maybe we have a feeling there, but we haven't owned up to it and said, yes, this is more of a driving force for me. So we need, what are some of these forces that are working in our lives? Desires, addictions, prejudices, judgments. See, it's not as though I can say I'm prejudiced, but when a judgment comes up and I make it a certain direction, I may discover there were some unconscious or subconscious forces that led me to that kind of feeling. If you have an emotional feeling, you immediately can fairly ask, is that from a past life? The parts that carry over are the emotions. From planetary sojourns, that's the mental abilities, whether this is a scientist or a mathematician or a great musician. Those come from other experiences, but the emotions from incarnations in this life. So here's a case history. This is a reading that I've read a dozen or 100 times, and as frequently happens when I'm studying the readings, I think, oh, I'll look at the whole case history. So think on these things as this quote. With the arising of rebellious forces, the body has assumed this attitude. I will break over this time, and next time I won't. You ever have that feeling? The rebellious forces. I'll break over this time, but next time I won't. And it says, Then conditions require that self makes a definite stand to be taken. Take this stand. If there is given me a definite program to follow, I will adhere to it, no matter what I may suffer mentally or physically. I will trust in the divine forces innate within my inner self for the strength to endure, for the ability to say no when I should. Well, that's in this little booklet, Think on These Things. I've read it a lot of times, and I thought, okay, what is that case history? So it was for a Jewish woman, about 20, 24, unhappily married. She comes to Casey basically with some sensitivity, like allergies or something like sensitivity of that kind, and a diagnosis of diabetes that Casey later says, you don't really have that at all. And by the way, in nearly all the cases of diabetes that came to Casey, he wants them to get off of the insulin. Don't become addicted to the insulin. Get off of it. And there are alternatives. Surprising, he says, the first thing he says, get to the basis of it. And he recommends something like 30 osteopathic adjustments. You see, there are certain areas in the autonomic nervous system, in the spine, when adjusted, can get things right. So the first treatment for that would be adjustments. Well, that's what he recommends for her, a number of adjustments. But she is of a rebellious spirit. And that's what he is addressing first. There may be definite lines, rules, or programs set out for the body, but to be bound by any set definite period of activity, whether mental or physical, is one among many of the conditions in the experience of the body that has so often caused the rebellious forces to arise in the body, mentally and necessarily physically. So that's the problem. By the way, that's the problem of every soul forever. In the beginning, or before the beginning, when we were one with God, we went astray with the spirit of rebellion. That is, we wanted to make choices that were not in full accord with the law of love. So that rebelliousness is what every one of us is dealing with. And that's why we live on the landing, because we're not always ready to take the stairway upwards. Then among the first considerations, the body should make up its own mind as to whether it is willing to pay the price in mental and at times physical anguish to reach the point where those conditions may be for the betterment and for the eventual awakening of the body, mental and physical. So he's saying, and repeats this more strongly, the rebellious forces must be addressed. And it may be pain, it may be painful, but we have to set ourselves to move forward. So he tells her, with the arising of rebellious forces, or some physical pains that were minor in themselves. And by the way, she got 7 readings. And whereas she started off with a fairly mild thing, within a matter of months, this thing goes downhill for her. With the arising of rebellious forces, or some physical pains that were minor in themselves, and necessary to be met by the filling of self with the hopes and the desire to overcome, and these being so overcome by the desires that have been allowed in the body has assumed the attitude, I will break over this time, and next time I won't. I will eat this because it's pleasant at the present. I will take this, for I don't want to suffer right now, and next time I won't. He says, this has been done until self loses such hold on self as to become, in a manner, the slave to self's own indulgences in mental, physical, and material things. These conditions then require that there be made a definite stand to be taken. If there is given me a definite program to follow, I will adhere to it, no matter what I may suffer mentally or physically. I will trust in the divine forces innate and now submerged often. Within my own inner self, I'll trust in the divine forces within my own inner self for the strength to endure, for the ability to say no when I shouldn't. I will adhere to that I know is not harmful. I will adhere to the use only of that which is beneficial. Where then may this be accomplished? First, that of determination. Now, this is an interesting word. I was talking recently with a young woman, and she has a half a dozen illnesses that are potentially fatal. All of them lifestyle. And I said, you know, the one thing that's potentially most detrimental to your health right now is smoking. And she's had made attempts to it, and I said, why haven't you stopped? What is it? And she said, and she used this word, I guess I didn't have the determination. So he uses this word. Where then may this be accomplished? First, that determination must be found in self's own mind, heart, and soul. For as the body knows, it is not all of death to die, neither it is all of life just to live. But to be of a service to someone is the only way that to bring about contentment, to find joy and pleasure. So he is really big on this. The only way we can find real joy, real contentment, real centeredness is when we try to be of service to others, when we allow ourselves to be. Then, when such a determination has been reached, once we determine, I will, when such a determination has been reached, choose that surrounding, wherever it may be, which is most conducive to bring those conditions in the experience of the entity. Now, those surroundings may be people. We cannot subject ourselves to certain kinds of temptations without presenting an unnecessary challenge to ourselves. So the choice to make a change in our life, we have to make change in those around us or those circumstances around us. There make the physical stand that though the heavens may fall, though my body may be racked with pain, I will conquer it here and now. So he doesn't give her any leeway. There's no leeway in this. Listen, that which must be met mentally in the torture of the body, meet it with a smile, knowing that it can be, it must be, it will be overcome. So the idea of... Here we are, standing on the landing, 32,000 times a day. We're basically saying, I'm going to go up, I'm going to go down. And what is up? That which you have set for yourself as your own standard. Am I going to measure up? And that's what's such genius about this spiritually inspired work. Not what someone sets for you as a standard, and not what society or the Bible or something says. You see, once we do this thing at a moral level, we're rebellious. Once we address, these are universal laws. Eventually, do you understand clearly that eventually every soul will be in full accord in oneness with God? We will be perfect in love. That's our destiny. And the problem is, will it take us another lifetime or two? Will it take us another 100 lifetimes? Will we carry this into other systems? And the point is that wherever we go, whether we incarnate again or not, wherever we go, We have to be in ourselves, and we have to, that the force of God, that's the dynamic. God's love is the dynamic in the universe. And Casey says, can the will of man resist the love of God indefinitely? Well, we can go through more pain, more suffering, more disappointment, more regret. Or we can say, as he tells this young woman, I will, no matter what the pain, no matter what the torture, no matter what it requires of me, I will take a stand. Well, it occurs to me that one of the most invaluable things for standing on the landing and making a choice is being grateful. See, that's a choice that we can make immediately. I am grateful for the opportunity. I've loved this passage from Think on These Things because it has such promise and such a challenge. Casey says, be glad you have the opportunity to be alive at this time. Some of you may think, oh, these are times we're kind of going downhill. Well, that's not the question. The question is, be glad to be alive at this time and to be a part of that preparation for the coming influences of a spiritual nature that must rule the world. See, the influences of a spiritual nature are going to rule the world. We can bring about that quickly, or we can bring it about slowly, but be a part of it. We here, especially, and Casey addresses those who had access to these readings, you should be the most grateful and joyful of all people to have this knowledge, to have access to this awareness and the opportunity. Be glad you have the opportunity to be alive at this time, to be a part of that preparation for the coming influence of a spiritual nature that must rule the world. These are indicated, and these are part of your experience. Be happy of it and give thanks daily for it. So every day, Lord, I thank you for this opportunity. I say, I start every prayer, I thank you for this glorious woman. And I'm thankful for Jesus. I'm thankful for the Bible. I'm thankful for Casey and the readings to be grateful. And then you can choose a stance that sort of points you uphill. Now I'm ready to move forward. So we have Thanksgiving coming up. Casey is really big on this. Listen. Then remember, Thanksgiving is your opportunity. Remember what we just read, be glad to be alive, to have the opportunity to be alive at this time. Thanksgiving is your opportunity to show your appreciation to your friend, your home, your mother, your children, yes, most of all, to your God. This is an opportunity in the next 2.5 weeks or so to be thankful, to have this day that we've set aside. It may be truly said, of all the many days for man's opportunity, of man's making, of man's concern, truly, Thanksgiving should be nearer and dearer to the hearts of those who are appreciative of life and its opportunities under any experience. For remember, it was instituted not under plenty, but under need. Those first pilgrims celebrating Thanksgiving, they were not celebrating prosperity. They were celebrating that they'd survived another winter and ready for one coming up. What is the need then of man in this day of disturbed mind of anxieties? That you may reconsecrate, rededicate each of you, your heart, your body, your purpose to the living God. This should be the message to all. So the idea of being thankful. And in this reading, it continues, pray that peace may be in the minds and hearts of those who direct the destiny of the many throughout the world. For they are not in power of themselves, but that you too may learn a lesson. I had puzzled about this for years, because the Bible says, and Casey says, no one is in power except by God putting them there. Well, we need to rework that a little. We need to say, given the choices of humankind, and given the circumstances that we built for ourselves, the leadership that we have is of our own making, and for our own growth and understanding. So, in the search for God material, the author says in a prayer, help us to be more tolerant of our leaders. Well, what this is about is that what we see in our leaders is what we as a people have built. If we are critical of them, then we need to be critical of ourselves. This is what we as a people have built for ourselves. Pray that peace may be in the minds and hearts of those who direct the destiny of the many throughout the world, for they are not in power of themselves, but that you too may learn the lesson. See, we look at them and we can learn a lesson about ourselves, that you too may learn the lesson to do and to seek to do the will of your Father, and not to do that which is in direct contradiction to that of praise to the Lord. Keep then the day in praise and thanksgiving in such ways, in such a manner, that you show your conscience that you worship God and are aware of your appreciation of life. Well, here we are, living on the landing, faced with thousands of opportunities always to make choices that are in accord with our desires or in accord with our aspirations, our spiritual longings. And these choices, like the Empire State, we're putting a brick in place. And if we work with these 32,000 choices a day, Casey says, if one ruled by the pituitary alone for 7 years, they could be a light to the world. See, this should be our aspiration, not just to get by, but to be a light to others and those with whom to deal. So, let me remind you of this. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your seed may live, that you may love the Lord thy God, and that you may obey his voice, and that you may cleave unto him, for he is thy life. Thank you.